This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk.
Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Libby Brody. How are you, Libby?
I'm very well, thank you. Thanks for having me back.
Not a problem. You're a wine educator and a brand ambassador for the wines of Lisboa.
Yes. I'm a big fan of the wine region of Lisboa. I'm also a journalist, a presenter, and anything else really in wine.
Yep. You've got a YouTube channel and you write for City AM, which is a financial column, but it's on wine.
Yes, two pages on wine for their sins. They just can't get enough. And I'm also on Instagram.
A whole two pages
whole two pages.
Really?
Every week.
That's a lot, isn't it?
It's a lot of wine. Someone's got to do it.
Okay, lovely. So what we're going to talk about today is last week we talked about Lisboa, the region Lisboa, and we talked a wee bit about the sort of key characteristics. Today, we've got a flight of four wines in front of us, a rosé, a white, a red, and a fortified dessert wine. It's not quite dessert wine material, but it's a fortified sweet wine. And we're going to talk about the wines, but we're also going to talk a little bit about food matching with them because I've historically sort of looked at food matching, very similar to WCT, to be honest, which is all about the structure. In fact, I was a little bit gutted when I was talking to the same MW, I interviewed him, that set the groundwork for WCT's food and wine matching. And I'd finally teased out my own position on it and I was really proud. And then about 6 months later, WCT announced how they were going to do a fight and it was like virtually the same. And I was like,
oh no.
You know when you work really hard and then you think you've got a really good understanding that you can teach people because no one else will know. Next thing you know, WC's teaching the same bloody thing and everybody knows the same stuff then. It's like, ah.
But you thought of it first.
No, I didn't. I copied an American guy.
Oh, really? So pass it on.
Very good thinker though. He was brilliant. We both use Tim Hannay, who's a master of wine out in Napa Valley, as our sort of base materials. I was a bit annoyed. You always think, oh, God, I've got something. I can teach something somewhat to people now that's quite unique and no one knows about it. And next thing you know, every student knows all about it. So it's like, oh, well.
But you can still teach it because you'll pass on that knowledge.
Yeah, to be honest, and we do. I understand it slightly differently to the way WCT interpreted it. So
you still have your own tweak on it then. You've got your own flair.
I do indeed. So we've got four wines in front of us. Yeah. We've got a rosé. Start with the rosé, I think.
Yes, the Falatorio. And this is actually by Casamaro. And I visited it when we were filming over there. And it's an absolutely beautiful spot. Unfortunately, it absolutely rained terribly on our particular visit there. But it's absolutely stunning. And this rosé is a blend of Camarate and Tinta Mueda. I apologise if I've pronounced those slightly incorrectly. I try my best. And it's quite a fruit-forward rosé. It's got a lot of fruitiness to it. I think that just going into sort of wine pairing and food, the reason I think it's so important is that wine is really created to be had with food. And whenever I've obviously gone around the world and I've interviewed a lot of winemakers, and when you ask any winemaker, I don't think I've ever differed from this actually, if you ask any winemaker, how do you want your wines to be enjoyed? They all say around the table with good food and friends or good company or something like that, because wine is such a social drink. It's such a social, and that idea of sort of breaking bread, having a glass of wine, I mean, it's pre-biblical really, isn't it? It's the effect that wine has on food and food has on wine, and that whole convivial sharing atmosphere, which I think makes it so important.
Mm-hmm. When I smelted, I was getting mainly red fruits, a little bit of something like bell pepper or something a little bit spicy in there. I wasn't quite sure what was going on. It was nice to see a rosé that isn't doing the salmon, Provence, no colour type of thing. I wouldn't call it a dark rosé, but at the same time, it's probably the darkest rosé I've seen in a long time. So
it's got a lovely sort of bronze edge to it, actually, I think. A bit of that sort of, a bronzy, peachy pink. But it is a bit richer in that colour. And I know that lots of people, therefore, we buy rosé with our eyes, don't we? Like so many people buy rosé with their eyes and they go for ones that are pale because they assume that these darker colours have more sugar in them or something, which obviously we know is complete nonsense. But this is obviously a dry rosé, but still very fruit forward, I think.
And the acidity is quite high as well, which is what we were talking about last week about the freshness coming in from the Atlantic. And are they at altitude here?
Yes, they do have some. I mean, quite a lot of the vineyards there actually do. You go out of Lisbon City into the wine region of Lisboa, and within 10 minutes you're up on a rolling hill on top of, you know, looking at this beautiful vista and these vineyards. So they do have altitude, and there is that fresh acidity. And I think, I'm not sure how you feel about food pairing with this, but obviously in that region, they do this amazing jamón. You know, they have these acorn.
Jamón.
I'm actually salivating thinking about it because we had platters of it, and they've got these acorn-fed pigs. Now, I don't know what it is about feeding a pig acorns that makes the flesh taste better. Sounded a bit awful. Flesh tastes better. Never mind. Moving on. It does.
I've been watching a lot of Walking Dead recently.
So. This rosé would go so well with flesh. But I think that's when you got that that ham or, you know, something, you know, one of those starters, we have prosciutto and melon. And so here you've got that fruitiness and that brightness, and that vibrancy. Cuts through the fattiness of that meat. It matches the saltiness because I do think you get that kiss of the sea in these wines. You do get a slight salinity, minerality to it. And I think something like that would just be perfect with this rosé in the sunshine. Platter of ham and this. What about you? What do you think?
I'm not a rosé bloke.
I've
never been a rosé bloke.
You gendering your wines now.
I am. I interviewed a blind guy once, and he was talking about these Provence roses, and he was going, "I can't see the colour. What the hell is the point of these?" And I sort of agree with them a little bit. I know. I'm so stuck. Like 20 years ago, before rosé became popular,
yeah,
and everybody was like, "No, rosé. Why would you drink rosé?" But I'm still stuck in that mindset.
You're still there.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. I drink rosé. I'm not a thing. But I'm often looking for a wine with quite a bit of character to it. I don't mind subtle.
What about like a Tavel or a, you know, one of
those? Oh, no, Tavel,
that's a richer.
Yeah. Especially with the structure and the tannins you get with those Tavels.
But you're less into the quaffable Provence style. Well, that's it. So I went to an amazing Provence lunch, which I realise is now slightly off topic, but I'm just going to give a little shout out. You know, Ray O'Connor. So MW Ray O'Connor, and he sort of led us through this lunch, and he's got a real thing for Provence, and he absolutely loves it. And so he was trying to talk about the differences in the region. But I'm a big rosé fan. I think it's such a wonderfully democratic wine in the fact that now, as you say, maybe not in the past, but now men and women both drink it. It's something socially acceptable. You can bring it to a barbecue. You can bring it with spice. You can bring it by the pool. You can bring it with a lunch. And it is a democratic wine, I think, and that is fantastic. And it depends if you like, obviously, your textural or fruit forward or very sort of fresh and quaffable and crisp, but whatever you want. I'm getting on my soapbox now just because you dissed rosé. But and I remember I was in Paris when Bon Jovi was launching his wine, and he said, "Real men drink pink." So, you know, maybe you should have him on here and you guys can go head to head on rosés.
Maybe. Let's have a look at the next wine. So this is the Quinta Pinto.
This is quite interesting because unlike a lot of the other wines I've had when I was over there, this is not indigenous varietals. This is really a Rhone blend of Viognier, Roussan and Marsan. Mainly Viognier, I believe about 45% Viognier, 30% Roussan and 25% Marsan. And so therefore, with this kind of wine, I mean, I love the Rhone. I'm a big fan of the wines they develop there. And with this kind of wine, I would always sort of think of it as a roast chicken. For me, it's a roast chicken. It's a Sunday lunch wine. And this one here, you've got a bit of that honeyed note from the French oak aging there, but it's still, again, I would say much fresher than a lot of the ones you would see from the Rhone. I would say it's got that lovely, bright, vibrant acidity running through it. Again, despite the oak aging and all the years that it's had in bottle. And if we were to pair a Portuguese dish, they have a lot of seafood, obviously, being a coastal country, and a lot of cod, and they have this sort of creamy cod dish, which I think would probably go really well with it. I'm going to try and pronounce it terribly. It's called a bacalhau con natas, but it's this really wonderful creamy cod dish which they make with potatoes and bay leaves and white wine, and it's a very sort of traditional dish there, and this is the sort of wine that they would serve with that.
I read up about that recipe. You mentioned that on some information to me. And it's a sort of dish I can make because you just make put it in layers and then you just cook it and it's done.
A one potter.
It's a one potter.
I love
potter.
A one potter.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
I don't like washing up. Who does? It's just like put it in one pot and then you put it in the middle. I'm also horribly clumsy. This is why I could never be a sommelier. So I like just putting a dish in the middle of the table and asking everyone to just help themselves because otherwise I know I'll just smash everything and spill things everywhere. But yeah, so very lovely.
In terms on the nose, I was getting a lot of... it's been fiddled around with in the winery. They've done a lot to it. I mean, they've done some oak work. I suspect they've done some malolactic and maybe even a bit of lees work in there as well. So I think
a little batonnage.
I think they've fiddled around with that. But there's still that underlying stone fruit sort of peach apricot flavour that you'd expect with a Viognier. And even though it's a 2018, it's still quite remarkably fresh. You know, there's a little bit of gold colour to it. On the nose, you know, it, for a wine that's what, 6-7 years old now, it's still pretty fresh, even though the acidity, the acidity for me isn't quite as high as you said it was. I've got it more as a sort of a medium acidity, not
don't
low.
You think that's fresher than the Rhone examples that you would have of Viognier there?
Probably, but it's not.
It's not like zinging off your tongue. It's
no,
like a,
no, no, no. And you don't expect that. I mean, Viognier is always a grape variety that isn't particularly high in acidity.
But without that, it could be quite flabby. So I actually think that actually the freshness there works really well with this. And you're absolutely right. It's not like a zing, zing, zing wine, but it is zing, zing, zing being a technical term. But it does have a brightness to it that with this particular blend from the Rhone, I would say this has a brightness to it.
The wine that I thought was incredibly bright was the red wine, actually. If you smell it.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a little sniff now.
I was wondering if it's got carbonic maceration in there because it's got that sort of brightness you get. It doesn't really have
a bit of like cherry sweet sort of non-natural sweet, but that sort of like poppy.
Kirshy, not banana or candy floss or any of that sort of stuff, but it's got the real brightness that I would expect from carbonic, and it's just got a little bit of that maybe kirshiness coming through. But I quite like this wine because it's quite... Well, let's talk about what this wine is first. It's from Marks and Sparks, isn't it?
Marks and Sparks. Good old Marks and Sparks. Yes,
For our American listeners, that's a supermarket chain, high-end supermarket or mid-upper supermarket chain in the UK.
It's a fancier supermarket chain. It's not just something, it's M&S something. And also Ocado as a delivery as well. And it retails at £8.50, which I think is actually a very good price for a wine like this. And there is that, as you were saying, sort of that cherry lightness to it. I also get a bit of clove and spice.
Clove, I got black pepper in there. Clove is the oak note. I was sitting there going, it's not quite vanilla, it's not quite cedar. Mm. I wasn't quite, but I could sense the oak, but I couldn't quite get it. But clove is absolutely, that's a very good description for this wine.
And it has quite a nice finish to it. And again, that brightness, as you just mentioned, that acidity, that lightness coming through on this. I mean, I was saying that there's a lot of seafood in the region that is, but they do love their meaty stews. And so they have a lot of sort of traditional, as we were just saying, because we hate washing up, go Portugal in this. They have these sort of one pot dishes that they serve in the family style. And they have one that's sort of full of every meat going. My mother, who's a pescatarian, would probably hate this, but it's sort of beef and pork and different types of sausage and blood sausage and chicken. And I think there's like rice in there and beans in there and all this stuff. And they make this huge sort of meaty feast of a stew. And this is the kind of wine that they would serve with that. I think because it has got that, it's got that lovely spice to it, but it has this like freshness. This has this freshness that comes through in that as well that would cut through the richness of that meat and balance it.
When I tasted it, it's quite deceptive, this wine, because... I sat down, I wrote a proper tasting note for these wines, and when you taste it, it feels light and fresh and zippy and things like that. But when you look at it, it's got high acidity, it's got reasonably lowish tannins, but then the body is actually quite high, but it feels light. And the alcohol's 13.5%, which is quite a... it feels a lot lighter.
I was quite surprised when I just saw on the bottle 13.5% because it doesn't have any of that sort of heat to it. I'd be able to quaff this back without realizing. Exactly. You need the stew to back it up.
It does have that brightness and the lightness. Now the last one is the wine I think you're gonna have a seizure over because it is an unusual wine, isn't it?
It is an unusual wine. They've been making this for over 500 years. It's a bit of a jewel in their crown. It's very, very special. This is also one of the smallest PDOs in the world, Carcavelos. And we went there and it's just, I love this wine so much. A Fort de Vaux, as you say, not a terribly sweet wine. In fact, when I was talking...
Let's get the name of the wine first.
Carcavelos.
Carcavelos. Yeah, but it's the Carcavelos Villa Arias. Is that right?
Yes, Villa Arias.
It's a seven-year-old.
Yes.
Non-vintage fortified wine.
Indeed. Thank you. And they do sort of older ones as well. We had a 14-year one when we were there, but the seven is absolutely perfect. And I liked it so much. I was actually just saying this to Chris when we were not recording, that I actually bought a bottle and brought it home. And that's quite a big thing when someone's working wine, where you actually bother, you know, to actually go and buy it and think it's good enough to bring back. And I think because it's such a part of their heritage and their hundreds of years of making this particular fortified wine with the Arinto and the Gallego Dorado and Ratino, they obviously have those grapes making this, and then they add a wine brandy, which is about 77% or something like that, to it. It's then put through French oak, which obviously I think you can get quite a lot of there. And although there's a richness to it, which there undeniably is, it's got those caramel notes, those honey notes, those nutty notes there, it is in no way cloying or luscious or thick or anything like that. It is incredibly fresh. It has a wonderful poise to it. It's really quite elegant as a fortified wine. And I did say it was a sort of a digestif, and they said, you know, aperitif, digestif. You know,
just drink it.
Stop chatting, woman, and just drink the wine. But it was, you know, for them, they would have it as an aperitif, a digestif with a dessert. And we've actually have got here one of my favorite things from Portugal.
We'll talk about that in a second. All right. That's fine. it got a gold medal at the International Wine Challenge. So it's got some good pedigree there as well. When I was tasting it, I got the same caramel, toffee notes. There's a bit of hazelnut, walnut in there. And it's sort of, I think the closest you can get to is like an Oloroso sherry, but it's not like an Oloroso sherry because there's a load of top floral-like notes there in it. And those notes are remind me more of a brandy, you know, an XO brandy or something like that, a good quality aged brandy.
Yeah.
So it's sort of, it smells and tastes sort of somewhere between a brandy and an Oloroso, but it's...
Well, that would make sense with the wine brandy being a part of it. But yeah, I hadn't thought of the Oloroso sherry, but you're bang on with that. Yeah.
It's close. It's not the same, though.
No, but I see the similarities in that.
Not as sweet as a typical Oloroso as well. And that's why I think I'm always worried about sweet foods and wines matching. But I think this, because it's somewhere between, it's not medium sweet. It's a little bit more than medium dry. It's somewhere in between those two. So it's not a proper sweet wine, but it has a little bit of oomph to it, doesn't it? So what's the thing?
So the pastel de nata. One of the best things, surely, to ever come out of this country is basically a fancy custard tart, really, isn't it? But it's this beautiful custard, lovely flaky pastry. And they said to me that they thought this was one of the best pairings ever. I have had this pairing before. They are right. They're quite on the money. This wonderful sort of creamy, thick custard, which, again, is not the sweetest dessert ever at all, but it has that sweetness to it, paired with the richness of this fortified wine, but with, again, that freshness and brightness of the fortified well, cutting through that, it is wonderful. Can we have a
crack at it?
Exactly. No, you just get chewing noises. That has to be one of the best pairings out there. That genuinely has to be one of the best pairings you've ever had.
It is very good, actually.
I like the way you said actually. The eyebrows have been raised. There was genuine surprise on this man's face.
Because when they turned up, what are they called?
Pastel de nata.
The pastel de nata. Yeah. They turned up very early one morning and we didn't know what they were for. They just arrived and we hadn't quite associated with this tasting with you. So I had one in the morning and I thought, this is quite nice. I like this. We almost scoffed a lot before we got here.
Yeah, can I just say, he just said I had one in the morning. How many are missing?
Four.
It's wonderful. Right? He's gone back in, by the way. After you saying not sure about the pairing, that's great, right?
It is, because even though the alcohol in this thing's 18.5%, and when you taste it by yourself, you feel the warmth, don't you? But the creaminess from the custard. And the custard is definitely a, a sweet custard. It's sweeter than the normal custard I'd make anyway. And I think they work. You know, it's not a sweet dessert. It is a sweet dessert, but it's not a proper. It's not like, oh my God.
You're going
like,
for chocolate fondant.
We're just doing this after Easter, so I've had so much chocolate and chocolate this, chocolate that. So it's sweet, but it's not too sweet. And the weight of the sugar is nicely matched, actually.
Yeah, yeah. You see, the eyebrows went up. You're surprised. You'll have to, after this, after we finish this, you're going to have to take these two with the wine and actually just enjoy it properly together.
Oh. All right. So we've tasted four wines, all reasonable wines. What I would say is, quite a range of styles, isn't it? There, you know, and you've got an older classic, more like Rhone style of wine. You've got a rosé. You've got a really weird light, heavy red.
Mm-hmm. really weird in a good way.
And a nice fortified wine, which is quite a nice, all within this one region of Lisboa.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and I would just also say that I've just clocked the percentage on the white wine as well, and that's 14%.
Yeah.
And I would never have thought of that either. So they have a wonderful balance to that.
Okay. Any final thoughts about the wine region of Lisboa?
I really think that people should visit it. I think it's an incredibly beautiful, unique, very easy to get to. You know, the flight's barely any time at all. I think it's about an hour and a half, if that. And then you can be in this remarkable city with the architecture and all the wonderful history to it and the great restaurants and bar scene and all of that. And then in 10 minutes, you're on a beach surfing or, you know, these amazing, or you're up in the hills with these beautiful old windmills, you're enjoying a glass of wine with a view. It's a, for anyone who's wine curious, for anyone who enjoys travel and food and drink, which I think anyone listening to this probably does, I would definitely say that I think Wine Enthusiastic called it a top wine tourism destination, and it 100% is. So go.
Excellent. All right, then. I think we'll wrap it up there.
Thank you so much again.
Cheers, Libby.
Cheers.